Excuse me, everyone. This is the operator. I need to inform you that today's conference call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time, and you may begin.
Thank you very much. Shall I go ahead and do a roll call, Rick?
Yes, please.
Thank you. This is the GNSO Council Constituency and Stakeholder Group Operations Work Team. Today is Friday, 15th of October. On the call, we have from the work team Ray Fassett, Avri Doria, Ron Andrus, and Wolf Ulrich Knoben. And from staff, we have Liz Gaster and Julie Hedlund.
Great.
Ray.
Great. Thank you, Julie. This is Ray Fassett. All right. So we're picking up today on what might be all of the remaining action items in front of us with pertaining to the rules of procedure. I am in the process of opening up some documents right now to start the right place. I don't have any housekeeping items offhand. Does anybody have any housekeeping items before we get started? Obviously, there's the normal. Anybody wish to declare an update to their disclosure of interest? Since it's only been 2 days, I doubt that there are, but I will go ahead and allow that. Anybody?
Yes. Right, if I may?
Yes, please. Wolf.
Wolf speaking here. So, may I just... saw the draft agenda for the council, next council meeting, and there is a part of the session is devoted to the DOI SOI question, roughly 20 minutes or half an hour or so. And I saw you will also may participate the council meeting. Is that the case? Do you know about that?
Yes, I was asked by the chair of the GNSO Council to join that meeting for certain parts to discuss the rationale behind the remedies that have been put in place for the absentee voting, for example.
Yes.
And also, secondly, as it pertains to the SOI, DOI. There are issues going on with regards to certain complexities of how to incorporate the remedies for the absentee voting into the various charters. Chuck thought it could be helpful if the rationale of this work team as to why we came up with such remedies could be useful to the council. And then secondly, also addressing the statements of interest and declarations of interest and how these go together. And I think some of what we're doing now pertains to what the issues are that have arisen that has brought this on. So does that answer?
Yes, okay. So I'm fine with that. I assume that you are very well informed by Chuck, you know, about the situation, because, as I mentioned last time, these procedures seem to me, personally, so from the discussion we had on council, are that critical in terms of simplicity, let me say that. It means, I think, some of the councillors, they expect very easy to procedures easily to be handled, so they don't like really to get deeply involved in the procedures themselves. It means so they would like to just to pick up something to know, okay, the procedure is okay, and not to handle it in a complicated way. So that's more what I understood, and so we have to take. To be careful about that. Otherwise, you know, people come up again and will ask for our new working teams, as it happened last time, and so on. And that would be really a disaster, I would say.
Well, Chuck did express his appreciation of our work team to go back and look at the issues that are involving the disclosure of interest, particularly the language we talked last time about them being written. He appreciated us taking on that work. With regards to the remedies that are in place in the procedures, I believe that those it's up to each stakeholder group to decide how they want to implement those remedies.
Mm. Yeah.
Isn't that right? So I don't know if it's up to the council members. I don't think the council members should be bogged down by these remedies unless, I mean, other than to the extent that each of the stakeholder groups chooses to implement them into their charters.
Yes, that's right, you know, but it's only the question. That's okay, and that's the kind of, I would say, type of education we have to do towards the different stakeholder groups and the council members belonging to stakeholder groups as well to understand how this process works. That's what I would like to say. So I got the feeling so it's not well communicated at the time being. So that may be the case.
Right. Now, I do know that each of the stakeholder groups were provided the opportunity to have a call, well, including with Ken Bauer, who, of course, created that chart and has done a lot of the drafting. And not many have taken them up on it, from what I understand. So you're right. So we just have to keep trying on the communication side for folks to understand the spirit. And really what Chuck reached out to me for was to explain the sort of the history or the rationale of why we even came up with these remedies to begin with. I think some of it had some of the communication, not so much from a tactical standpoint, how to incorporate the remedies into the charter, for example, but why? Why? What was our rationale? What was our thinking? What was the basis for how these came to be? And Chuck thinks or is suspecting, in the spirit of trying to improve communications, that by my trying to articulate that to the council will help in why they're being asked or why the stakeholder groups are being asked to look at these remedies to determine whether they want to include them or not into their own respective charters.
Yes,
Aubrey.
I think one of the questions that you'll be facing, just from my listening to the council and reading the council list, is the question of timing on why things need to be done in writing before a meeting as opposed to doing. Not passing judgment on that issue, but I think that is one of the issues that you will encounter or questions that you will encounter.
As it pertains to the remedies?
As it pertains to the remedies. Why, the absentee, not the absentee ballot, but the proxy or something like that can't be done. I've been at the meeting for 10 minutes. All of a sudden, I'm running out of the meeting because there's been an emergency. I give my vote too. And run out. Why that isn't? And so that, I'm just.
No, that's good.
That's
a good heads up.
that I've seen among various council members is the written formality of it, and why it all has to be prior. Maybe those questions have his answered, but I kind of doubt it.
Yeah. So I think we do have an answer for that as a work team. So if that were to be the day, and I was asked that question, I think the answer I would provide is that the high-level principle that we were really trying to hold to that is that council members are to be present at these meetings, that the vote is really not the councilor's vote, it's really the vote of the stakeholder group. And while things happen, if you will, those are exceptions, and should be stressed upon as exceptions. And the spirit of this is to really make clear to council members that you are, your duty is to be there. And if you allow sort of relaxed guidelines in terms of on the fly, if you will, ways, then what are you accomplishing in that regard?
As I say, I wasn't trying to get into this.
But no, I'm looking for it. No, I'm looking. Well, actually, I did that because I want to make sure that I am stating what the work team.
If I happened to be in the meeting and didn't happen to be a member of this group, I might challenge you on where the decision came from that it's not the counselor's vote. having been duly elected by their constituency slash stakeholder group and such, and you might find divided opinion on that. So that's a decision we made that you might also be questioned about. Otherwise, there's also a presumption in our answer here that sort of says, yes, you know.
Let me try that first one. I think that issue arose when it came to I have a conflict. I can't vote on something. I have a conflict with my firm or my business.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And what we said was, okay, well, we certainly can acknowledge and appreciate that those conflicts can exist, but at the end of the day, the vote that you're not able to vote on is the stakeholder group's vote, not your vote. So what we can do is look to provide you remedies of how to pass that vote. All right,
yeah.
But not go so far as allowing it to become such a loophole that it's not that the procedures are not for the purpose of what they're intended for, not to be so loose that they become I hate to use the word gamed, but that they become gamed.
I almost feel like we're doing trial prep here, and I apologize.
No, it's okay. But I want to make sure that the group is okay with those kinds of responses.
That brings up the question. Okay, I understand why you're doing it in these conflict of interest situations, but in terms of having extended it to all absences, can you explain why, you know, you all decided that it wasn't only for those where you wanted to relieve me of the burden of doing something I had a conflict of interest, therefore my vote reverted back to my constituency and stakeholder group, and have decided that for all votes, including a sudden absence or a planned absence, it applies to that too. As I say, I feel like I'm doing jury prep or,
Yeah, the issue is the unexpected sudden absence. That is really what the issue is, in that people are questioning, I think, and I believe I have an answer. I have to go back and look through my notes.
Anyhow, I'll shut up now.
Okay, no, that's good. Thank you, Aubrey. Anybody else? Okay, so why don't we try to move into today's agenda? So we saw I have in front of me some of the documents from the action items that Julie sent over. One of them is the current GNSO operating procedures document that has the red line items in there under definitions and disclosure of interest, we asked that the word written be stricken. And in a separate section under 5.4.2, another sentence was stricken. And does anybody have any comments on this item in terms of its completeness now? To recommend, the objective is to recommend this document, these changes now, over to the OSC.
Ray, it's Wolf speaking.
Yes.
Just a question. Well, I saw the document, and I also saw your comment on what was proposed with regard to the exemptions, for example. So you suggested a little bit different with regarding including staff and contractors, isn't it? So
good point.
Is that already in the document or not?
No, it is not. It would be, from what I can determine and going back, it would be a new section, 5.2.3. And I believe what happened here is we went back to staff to question them on the concept of, right now, I believe, as we all understand, the rules of procedures basically do not exempt staff. It's silent, so therefore I think the presumption is that they're not exempt. So we went back to staff on the question a few meetings ago, and staff came back with, I think now, Julie can correct me, but I think what happens, they came back with a 5.2.3 exemptions. And then, of course, that's them.
Ray, this is Julie.
No.
However, yes, that's true. That was some suggested language that Samantha had floated several weeks ago. However, After that, the work team had asked for because there was some discussion around that, and then the work team had asked for additional clarification from legal staff on SOIs, you know, for staff, you know, staff providing SOIs, and that was the sort of additional language and or statement from legal that we've been awaiting that we haven't received. I did ask, you know, put in through the request that, you know, from our action items on Wednesday, and I have been advised that legal is still working on something that they're hoping to have out within a week. They also have stated that they're very supportive of the general idea that these types of interests have to be identified in some form with respect to staff. So they don't have any proposed language at this point for a section on exemptions. So that sort of that previous section is sort of now held in abeyance. It's not really an active proposal anymore from legal. But I think that they would be nonetheless extremely interested in what the work team has as far as guidance along the lines of what you sent, Ray, with respect to language on exemptions and some of the things that we discussed on Wednesday's call with respect to declarations of interest and so on.
All right, so right now we're okay with the edits as they set in that document that Julie did for us, correct? The two deletions, basically,
yeah.
Right? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's go right into this then. How do we feel as a group about adding a section called 5.2.3 exemptions, which is entirely intended to make clear to anybody that staff is not required in their participation in policy venues, and the reason is because they are already bound to be obligated to ICANN. So how do we feel about that? Right now, as I said, it's silent. And if I thought our, and I could be wrong, you guys can correct me, but I thought that the idea was originally when we sent these on over to the OSC and eventually approved, was that no, staff involvement is not, staff is not exempt from completing SOIs or DOIs. So my point is this question will come up. We've heard Eric Bruno Williams intimate quite passionately the issue is real. It won't be the last time. So my question to the group is, and we've had this prior suggestion from staff to include a 5.2.3 exemptions. How do we feel about including that, something for that?
This is Aubrey. I personally support, I guess, Eric's position. I guess it's also been mine,
mm-hmm.
that we don't need such an exemption. And, you know, I know we're still waiting for legal to tell us why they absolutely must have one. And I know that we've offered sort of a compromise position that says, well, maybe not SOI as long as you've done X, Y, and Z, but still DOI, especially in the cases of ABC. But that's sort of a compromise that's still dangling and that hasn't been responded to. So I would say at this point we're not at a place to add exception.
Okay. Anybody else?
This is Ron.
Yeah, Ron.
I think that I understand the principle of exemptions, and in my view, the principle of exemptions stands on the basis that I sign a contract as an employee with ICANN, or I am a consultant to ICANN. Therefore, I have a responsibility to, kind of a fiduciary responsibility to make sure that I put the interest of the organization first. So I can see staff getting an exemption on an SOI. But I do think the DOI would be a valuable thing to keep in place for staff, because things could have changed in the short term for staff member, and therefore the DOI process brings that out. should be a non-issue for a staff member any more than it is for a working team member. When you ask that question, does anyone have a DOI? Either they have one or they don't.
So their only avenue, though, in the DOI example is a verbal.
Yep. Something's changed on this particular topic, and therefore I'm going to declare my interest in this topic as a staff member.
Whereas everybody else is required to verbally state it and then go back to their SOI and update it.
Right. And that may be that the DOI brings them to, you know, that maybe the staff member is no longer full-time. Maybe that's part of the issue, that they've gone on part-time and they've taken on work with another body, and so they declare that. And then at that point, if they're now part-time, they would also have to go back and do an SOI.
Right. So at the end of the day, are you suggesting that 5.2.3 exemptions could be useful?
I can agree with an exemption on SOI.
Yeah.
But
not
I don't
DUI.
Think there should be any exemption for DUI.
All right, a higher level, should we be going down the path as a work team, Ron, in putting in a 5.2.3?
I'm ambivalent on it. I can go either way. But I do believe that if there is a, you know, if staff are going to be exempted, then we should have a 5.2.3 simply because it clarifies why. If staff are going to be forced to fill out SOIs, then obviously exemption is no longer necessary. But if, in fact, we're going to give staff that exemption, then theoretically there should be some documentation that supports that.
Well, staff has communicated to us that they need that there is a need for an exemption, and we've acknowledged that we don't have a problem with the exemption.
Mm-hmm.
Avery, I hear you. I'm not...
Well, you had placed a, we had no problem as long as they did the things you talked about.
Right. So let me try that again. So, Avery, if staff was able to provide a legitimate reason in your mind of why filling out SOIs is redundant or not necessary, would in that scenario, would you feel it appropriate to go ahead and put in a 5.2.3 exemption?
Okay, this is going to be what is mean question. I think if they are able to provide it, and by that we discussed at the last meeting, which means it's a written, you know, on the website statement that says in all its activities, all full-time staff members are committed to the following A, B, C, D, and, you know, and this serves as the statement of interest for all staff members, or some such wording, then, yes, I'm totally fine.
Did you see the language I put together just to float out, where I changed what they originally gave us? All I did was include full-time, or I'm sorry, exclusive contractors, and I took out where it said in the interest of ICANN and the broader interest of the internet community. I just don't think that can fly personally, but anyway, I took that out and made it just really crystal clear that any ICANN staff or exclusive contractor is to be understood to be representing the interests of ICANN. I thought in our last call, not the last call, but one before that, you were kind of warming up to that, Avery.
I actually am not all that worried about what the language says, and I'm fine with it. As long as it's something stated publicly, that then if someone like Eric or others says, wait a second, I don't think so-and-so is behaving according to this SOI code that you stated for the following reasons, then there's recourse. I think anything said privately to this group as an explanation is interesting, is good, it should be recorded, but it's not sufficient.
Right. That's why I want to put it into the rules. Yeah.
I wasn't thinking it's not so much in the rules as a declaration made by staff. And we're all making declarations. And what I'm seeing as a reasonable substitute is for legal staff using or whomever within ICANN making their singular SOI that applies to all full-time, you know, or applies to all.
Yeah, but don't people want to point to the rules? I mean, when these things come up, you know, like you're playing a game and you're arguing over, you ever play Monopoly? I'm sure we all have. And okay, let's get out the rule book. Don't people want to go to the rules and say, you know, look, it says right here.
Well, I think we should have a rule that says they have that statement online, and then because that statement may change over time, given the realities of the world, without needing to change the rule book. So yes, I think there should be a pointer in the rules that says, you know, staff, and it's almost not an exception, but perhaps it is, you know, staff can opt to make one statement of interest declaration, one public statement of interest publication that applies to all staff members participating in any and all, you know, policy, et cetera, working stuff. And then that works.
Yeah.
So we put in a pointer to their statement, and there needs to be their statement. And then they make that whatever it is, and then we can bleat in public if we don't like it as much as we like, and it becomes a public issue of, wait a second, you got to be kidding, just like anything else happens. And it also gives people a leg to argue from if they do not believe a staff person, which, I mean, I'm not saying I have cases. You know, Eric may have cases. I'm not saying I have cases. If, you know, someone feels that that's not the case, then they have something to make an appeal against.
All right, so it could be something like this. 5.2.3, exceptions, colon. It is the obligation of ICANN staff to provide a blanket explanation of why all staff, all full-time staff members and exclusive contractors are representing the interests of ICANN at all times.
I wouldn't go so far as to say it's an obligation. What I would go so far as to say, all staff members may be exempt from the individual responsibility of an SOI if ICANN has posted a global statement of SOI applicable to all employees and those with exclusive contracts with ICANN.
That was good. I like that. Can you write that down?
Probably. Although,
that was very good. I like that. Let's hear from Wolf and Ron. What do you guys think?
Yeah. Oh, I tried to follow. So Wolf speaking. The first thing, with regards to Ron's comment, I'm still not clear why you make the difference between the in that respect between DOI and SOI with regards to staff declaration obligation to declare a DOI but not an SOI.
Wolf, if I may, this is Ron.
Yeah.
Just to clarify that, because what we're saying is that, you know, the SOI is their statement, a staff statement of interest is I work for ICANN, and therefore
yes.
I put the corporation first.
That's okay. Yes.
However, something may happen, again, recognizing SOI as a long-term statement, DOI is something that's more current, something just happened recently. So if there was, the reason that the DOI is important is that the staff member has this exemption under the policies we're discussing now, but if something changes, the DOI forces them to make the community aware that at that moment something has changed. If we don't ask them to comment in the DOI period, then the community may never be aware that that staff person now has gone on halftime with ICANN and halftime with IGF. That's the point I'm bringing out. So the only way we could ever determine that a change has happened in a staff member's circumstances is through the DOI process. That's where I was coming from.
And this is Audrey, if I can add a possible thing to it. I mean, among the things in DOI, and we haven't really spoken to this, but I think it's pertinent. If you're, you know, a contractor and your company is also in another part of the company, an applicant for a GTLD, or if your spouse is an applicant for a GTLD, that could reach the level of being worth a DOI.
And I think all we're saying here is I think that when you peel it all back, all we're saying to staff and contractors is, if you feel you have something to declare, declare it. That's all we're saying.
So this is Liz. I have another way of maybe expressing and see if this is what you, you know, just if it's crisp and it accomplishes it, could say something, tell me if this works, but it would say something like, staff can satisfy this requirement by submitting a single staff-wide statement of interest, provided that any additional relevant interests also be disclosed in a DOI or in addition.
Yeah, and I think you could say verbally, right?
Yeah, whatever you want. You can fill it in if you like, just as a structure for expressing the idea.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I'm just playing with the words, really.
I'm pretty good with that. I'm just thinking to myself, okay, how do we get this language? We're almost at that point, right? We're at that rubber hits the road. We want to get this done. So what is this language? Is my
and just
question.
As a point, you know, I think that legal stuff will help, not hurt, once we get that.
We got to get this in front of the council.
I just sent language. I don't know if it's good, but I just sent that.
You just sent it?
To the mailing list,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, if staff has an issue with it later or legal, then they can raise it at the OSC level.
And I even tried to put in the last thing that Liz said, but I'm not sure I did it competently.
Hmm. Okay, I don't have it yet.
I mean, I could possibly read it, what I just sent.
Yeah, why don't you?
Well, let me find it because I have to go to the mailbox.
Okay, a second question, Wolf speaking, I have with regards to Avery's suggestion. It's not clear to me what it would be the difference between an SOI for staff, a kind of summary of SOIs for staff provided by ICANN, or the individual SOI given by staff members of the group. How should that be? Should that look like in practice? So, do you mean it's kind? Is it kind of one? Let me say general SOI for all ICANN staff.
Yeah.
Or
yes.
Yes. Basically, it's one, and I had sent that language from the wrong address, so I just resent it. It's basically one statement from ICANN that basically says all staff members participate in working groups and working teams, in the role of advisors. Their only interest in participating is to serve the requirements of the ICANN processes, or some such, you know, much more legalistic, much nicer wording.
I see. Yes.
And therefore, they don't have to say anything more because that applies to all staff. The DOI, which they might say was, you know, by the way, someone that's participating in the jazz group I'm co-chair of, and this, again, is not an example that's happening, is, by the way, just wanted to mention that my husband or my wife is working with a consortium of people who's looking into applying or is advising a group in Africa who will be applying for aid. So I just wanted to get it on the record that, or in another group sort of saying, you know, I just want to point out that I'm the editor for a security RFC that may pertain to the object we're talking about, and thus just wanted to get that on the record. And again, I don't think that one's happening either. It's just a for instance. I'm not making any accusations. But it's for those kinds of things where you're doing something special, you're doing something extra that may affect the viewpoint you have. And so you basically, that's why you put a flag up and say, hey, when you're listening to me, be aware that this may or may not be the case.
Okay, accepted. So I like this idea of having that such a general SOI provided. So.
Okay, I've got your language, Aubrey.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on, I'm just playing with it a little bit. Sorry for the delay.
This is Ron. I'm reading through the, your proposal, Avery, and I'm just wondering whether we need the word if ICANN has posted the global SOI. Why don't we say they would be exempt because ICANN?
Simply because they haven't done so at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say at some point 2 years later, they unpost it.
After.
It's a conditional rule.
Mm-hmm. After, instead of if.
Okay, yeah.
There you go.
What was
okay, that's fine. I tend to be computer language-y. If this has happened, then that has happened. But yeah, after is fine, too.
So, Ray, just so you understand what we've been discussing, it says it should read, ICANN staff members may be exempt from the individual responsibility for filing an SOI after... rather than if, after ICANN.
Got it.
As opposed to the global. That, and it's rather SOI, which should, rather than the pertain, should be that pertain.
Yeah.
Avery, you just got to slow down, girl.
I think these are my standard typos. I think something should... thank you.
After the opposed to the global SOI, that pertains to all employees and those. Blah, blah,
okay.
Blah.
I just did a wordsmith, and I was able to capture that with that one. And let's see if I just send it to the list. See what you guys think.
It's my typos while we're waiting. It's my typos that allow me to give up control of the language I write so easily because I know it needs to be corrected.
It's a very nice story.
Okay, so while we're waiting on email... We want to make sure we get over to, Chapter 5 and look at those edits. Has everybody had a chance to look at the edits that Julie forwarded to us, particularly 5.3.3 contents? If not, take a look at that now while we wait for email to... my own. All right, here, let me read what I put together. ICANN staff members can be exempt from the individual responsibility of completing an SOI after ICANN has posted a global SOI that all employees and those who have an exclusive contract with ICANN are representing the interests of ICANN at all times. Individual staff members would still be obligated to make a verbal declaration from time to time on any particular interests they may have as these individually arise.
This is Avery with a pedant comment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can indicate physical ability to do something.
Mm-hmm.
May indicates the permission. Now, it may just be correct to say are exempt after. And not mm-hmm. may be exempt, because may be exempt, as I think about what I wrote, could mean that somebody would decide in a particular case that they weren't.
Mm-hmm.
And it brings in an ambiguity. Perhaps better word than may or can is are.
I agree with the word after. Yeah, that does make sense to me.
I also agree.
Yeah, okay.
All right, so I think you guys should have that now. Just polishing it up here.
Yeah, Ray, this is Julie. I have it.
Okay. So obviously we've got one change already.
And I've noted that. Can becomes are.
Right. Yeah. Can be becomes are.
Can be.
That's another one of my standard typos. I would have just replaced the can with are and would have had are be.
Yeah, Aubrey, we must think alike, because that's what I was going to do.
You might want to change, too, in the second sentence, would still, to are. Individual staff members, or remain. Individual staff members remain obligated, are obligated, whatever you guys think.
I guess I think R is consistent
yeah.
with what we're saying.
Parallel construction.
You could say should. There's really no policing or enforcement action here. Maybe it should be should. Individual staff members should make a verbal declaration from time to time on any particular interest they may have. Maybe should. It's not a must. You know, this is the old should must thing.
Well,
right?
Why is it not a must?
It is a must.
Why is it not a must? Because when you put must in, there's got to be an enforcement ability.
Yeah, the chair enforces that thing. Anybody have a DOI? And the staff is obliged, as is any other work team participant.
Right.
Okay.
And if I happen to be working with so-and-so's wife on something or happen to know because they're a competitor of mine, I will enforce it.
Yeah.
By saying, hey, wait a second, isn't so-and-so, et cetera, or aren't you doing, and that's what makes it enforceable, just like it's enforceable with everybody else.
Exactly.
All right. How about individual staff members are obligated?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That works for me. So, with that said, I guess in front of the word ICANN at the very beginning, it would read what 5.2.3 exemption and colon. ICANN staff member, or underneath it? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it would just, if we're following the general construct, it would be 5.2.3 exemptions, no need for a colon, I don't think.
Okay.
And then the text would disappear below.
Okay. Are we all okay with that?
Yeah.
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 All right.
I guess I do have a question. Do we,
sure.
Since we are saying in this section for exemptions that individual staff members are obligated to make a verbal declaration from time to time, then do we had talked on Wednesday about also inserting language in the section on declarations of interest that indicated that those applied to staff as well.
I think we got it covered up here. I don't think we need to be redundant. What do others think?
Agreed.
Less is better right now, I think, on the edits.
I've captured these.
Great. Okay, so I think that takes care of that document now, doesn't it? The document that you sent over that had the GNSO operating procedures 5.0. I think that takes care of that. So you're going to add this in.
Yeah, I've added it in based
right.
on what you've provided and what we've discussed as changes. So,
okay. So now we're on to 5.3.3, right?
Right. And that was some previous suggested language from legal on a way to address concerns about how whether or not you can sort of have a finite place to look for ICANN, contracted parties so that someone can answer these questions, as best as they could without having to look at, try to figure out every single possible,
yeah.
That ICANN has a contract with.
Okay, so just for housekeeping, is this it then? I mean, this is, or everything now is left, this is it for us, right? Is figuring out this 5.3.3?
Yes, that's all that I'm aware of, except for now, keep in mind, as you reminded me, actually, Ray, 5.3.2 relates to the online form, which also has been held in abeyance because 5.3.3 is not determined until we determine the contents. We can't really determine the form. And I noted that in, I think, some of the email traffic that we have had earlier, in the mention of a form that I think Aubrey had raised some concerns about what this form would be and to what extent it would be sort of open and so on. And I don't think the procedures actually delineate that, but I guess that would be a question for the group as to whether or not we want to have a little bit more clarity. I'm not trying to create work. I'm just trying to remember that I've seen.
these are things that was an issue I thought was sort of something that later in implementation groups should look at, and I'm certainly not in favor of adding implementation work to this particular group.
And thank you. I certainly wasn't trying to suggest that. And I think that the Section 5.3.2 doesn't state, what the form should be and what it should contain and so on, you know, and what format it should be. So that certainly, I agree, could be an implementation. I just wanted to
Ray, this is Ron.
Yes, Ron.
I unfortunately have a hard stop in 13 minutes. So if we could jump into this thing, I would be happy.
And I apologize.
No. I just wanted to make
it. No, I'm glad you pointed that out, Julie. All right, so let's go right into number four. I've read it a few times. Anybody have any thoughts?
I'm not comfortable.
Yeah, it's Ron. Let me throw out the kinds of things that I had. So basically what we had asked for was a list of all contracted parties to ICANN. And what we've come back with is a list of links to the registries, the registrars, which are the contracted parties in the house. I don't know of other contracts that might be out there that are not included, but I'm assuming that that's the only contractual relationships that ICANN has, because this is what illegal has given us back.
No, but, Ron, I have to correct
Ron?
That. Ron, I'm
please,
sorry. What we did is we went back to staff on the feasibility of creating and publishing a list of all of its contractors, and staff came back and stated that at this time it is not feasible for them to do that. And we said, and we really started to attack this as to, well, why were we even asking for this to begin with, and it became because we were in these contents asking a question that couldn't be answered by some, they felt, unless there was such a list. So, then it became an exercise of, well, was the intention of what we were asking really about making ICANN publish a list of contractors, or was it merely for the purpose of allowing people to state that they have an arrangement that they should be disclosing? So then it became an exercise of changing the wording for not the intent of making ICANN publish a list. Although if they could, that would be great. We went back, we asked them, can you do that? And they said, no, it's really not feasible for us at this time. We do share the vision of doing so in the future, but right now is not something we can commit to for these rules. That's my recollection and really kind of take on things. Anybody else have any thoughts?
Well, if I may, I just finish that my comment that I'm a little perplexed that this is the list that they provide us with. I understand what you've just said, but if we have the registries, we have the registrars, who else is out there contracted that we're not aware of in this transparent organization?
That's a different issue. This is about the transparency and disclosures and statements of interest as it pertains to individuals' involvement in ICANN venues.
I know. I understand that. But what I'm saying is that they provided us a partial list, and I'm still not, and I didn't get a satisfactory answer from Samantha when she was on the phone as to why they cannot publish a list of all those that with which ICANN has a contract. Now, I understand one of those things they haven't been able to apply someone to do the work, as I understood it. But, again, these are pretty short lists, I would think. In any case, the other issue I had with this was the issue of, so we've got the link to the registries, we've got the link to the registrars. Then I went and looked at the link for the IRS 990 filing. And I don't understand why we would say the highest paid individual contractor, so any contractor, that someone has a relationship with should be noted. So I'm still stuck on that same point. I don't know why ICANN, as a transparent body, cannot provide a list of its contractual relationships so that anyone who's filling out a statement of interest a statement of interest cannot make it very clear that, yes, I have a relationship with XYZ party. So
I think that question has to be taken up under their operating plan and budget discussion, in terms, because that's an allocation of resources issue. why they can or how.
I'm sorry, Chair. I just don't understand. This is a very simple list. Somewhere in a file, it says, here's all the people we're contracted with. There's got to be something there. No office cannot have a list of its contracted parties.
But as a work team, all we can do is seek advice from staff. We ask the question, and I'm not sure it's our place to judge whether that the response is what we want it to be. It's merely what it is.
The response is a stonewall is what I'm hearing, quite frankly. I'm hearing stonewall. I'm not hearing, we'll put an intern on that. They'll pull all the contracts and they'll give the information. I mean, if something's buried way back in a file somewhere that they don't know, no one knows. But I just cannot understand that an organization of this size, with the few contracted relationships it has, it's not like it's contracted all over the planet.
I'm not saying I disagree. I think I have to be careful as to how far this group reaches out of its abilities.
Can I make a point that Christina Rosette raised in a conversation with Liz Gaster and I?
I think it has to do with that, if there was such an exhaustive list published anyway, it would nearly be impossible for Christina to go through that, as lawyers do, to investigate their conflicts.
I'm sorry.
Without such a list, she couldn't.
Well, no, hold on, but that was my take. Now let's hear what Julie and Liz heard.
Well, that was the point. Her point was that if it's a huge list, then and a complicated list, that she couldn't she couldn't easily answer, or perhaps not honestly answer this question.
Okay, so here, I think that was my understanding too. So, look, I know she came out originally and said, look, if you're going to ask me that question, I need to have a list. Now she's allowed to change her mind or have a different reflection on things. She's Christina in particular, we're picking on her, is now saying that, well, even if this list is such that it is so large, it's not feasible for me to go through it. And from time to time, by the way, this isn't a one-time thing. You have to continually review that list to see if any new conflicts arise as you take on new clients. Think of the attorney situation. So, I accept that as substantive feedback. I understand that she was the one originally. So it comes back to, again, rephrasing the question or that is in these contents in a way that isn't saying, well, they can't even answer the question if there's not a list. That's what we're trying to do.
Chair, this is Ron. I'm struggling with all of this because when we talk about a list that I can't check, what do we talk? I'll alphabetize the list and I'll provide a search function for it. I mean, this is nuts. This is 2011. We're on the cusp of. There's no difficult issue in listing all of the contracted parties as they did with the registrars, as they did with the registries. What other parties stand outside that they have not told us about? That's the question. Now, for some reason, legal saying, no, we don't want to tell you what those guys are. I cannot expect it's 100. I can't even expect it's 50 other contracts they might have. Because after registrars and registries, what other contracts would you have? So my point is, we should be building an institution here. And institution building means that ICANN should be publishing a list. I mean, When I went to the, I put my name forward for the review team that is happening right now, ATRT or whatever it is, I had to put my resume online. I had to publish a tremendous amount of detail about myself. Now, why I, as a volunteer, have to publish all of that to be selected or not for a work team, and in the meantime, ICANN, the body for whom we're doing all this voluntary work, isn't required to publish a list of people it's contracted with?
I think my point I'm trying to make is we can't force ICANN staff, the organization, to do something through the GNSO Council rules of procedure. As much as I might agree with everything you just said, I don't think it is within our authority or legitimacy to force ICANN staff as an organization to do something through the GNSO Council rules of procedure.
Well,
that's
I don't know why,
point.
Because that's how this works. It's a bottom-up, consensus-driven organization. Our job is to determine right now the rules of procedure. One of the things we've settled on was statements of interest. Statements of interest, why? For transparency purposes, so people know who's talking from what position. So as we've been going through this thing for months on end, we've now come to a place where we have a list of questions we're asking. One person, only one person, said, well, I'm not sure if I don't know what the list looks like. And that's then tweaked members' interest here, working team members' interest. So as a
you're asking a different question. Why doesn't this language? I'm reading number four, and you're saying it could be more than that.
I'm just saying that there cannot be a long list after what's been presented to us here. Registries, registrars are contracted. Then there's going to be some contractors, and they've added the highest paid. Well, I don't know why highest paid. If you're a contractor, it's a contractor. If I have a relationship with a contractor, my wife might be a contractor, and she's getting paid $12,000 a year from ICANN. But is there a reason why she shouldn't be? I shouldn't show I have a relationship to an employee of ICANN?
I think the difference, though, is
I tend to support. Yes, if I can, I actually tend to support that because one of the very interesting things is, as a member of the volunteer group, if I've got a family member or someone else who is or even if I'm part-time contracting, I can make more work for myself by asking more questions. And so that, you know, I mean, as a contractor, especially with the flexibility of constantly getting, you know, new work items on a contract, I think it really is a very important part of transparency to know that when I'm saying, you know, we really need an extra report on XYZ, and I know that it's, you know,
someone I'm involved with
is going to get that contract.
Yeah, as the chair of the work team. Folks, as the chair of the work team, all I can do at this point is obviously we're not going to get there and approving this number four here. All I can do is go back to staff and say the work team does not accept the fact that you cannot provide a complete and exhaustive list. That's all I can do. In the meantime, 5.3.3 does not get adopted or does not get recommended over the OSC.
Ray, it's Liz. I just have one additional small suggestion.
Yes, please.
So to the degree you see this as a GNSO, you know, kind of going to Ron and Aubrey's point, to the degree you see this as necessary to resolve the GNSO statement of interest, sort of Christina's issue, that they're inextricably linked, then, you know, you could certainly make a recommendation or assertion in this report that that's necessary. But I think, in addition, the broader question that you're both making about ICANN transparency and the degree to which you feel like overall, beyond the GNSO ops procedures work, that you think this should be an element of transparency, I think you should make a DIDBY request that makes that clear, this document, you know, disclosure, official document disclosure request, because that gets attended to at the broader level and sheds the light on your concern at the broader level. So it would give you a way of asserting that point of view and making that case in addition to this context of the...
Well, my question is procedurally, how do we make that assertion? I'm not against it, by the way. I just hope everybody understands. I'm just trying to represent the group here.
Yeah. There's a procedure online.
There's a procedure online for what, Liz?
I'll send it to you. To request information from ICANN that's currently not being disclosed.
The DEI something?
It's a DIDP. It's an acronym. And I wish I could tell you right off the top of my head what it stood for, but I can find out.
Are you suggesting that I, as the chair of the work team, use that procedure behalf of the GCOT?
I'm making a distinction that I think you were making before, Ray, about that this goes beyond. I think, I don't know that it does, to the degree it goes beyond what you, as the GCOT chair, feel is within the remit of this group to facilitate the SOI issue. Like, Ron is raising a broader issue about transparency at ICANN and, you know, his view that the names of contractors should be disclosed. That's a broader, that goes beyond GNSO ops procedures. The original conversation emerged because some members thought that it was needed in order to adequately make their disclosures of interest and statements of interest. And Aubrey, you just gave an example of how that could be possible in your case, too. And I understand that. And so that might still need to be something you say in this report. But in addition, to the degree that members of this group feel that ICANN should be more transparent about contractors separate from its impact on GNSO statements of interest, I'm simply making the group aware that there is a process for requesting information from ICANN that isn't public today that you feel should be public, and it also shines a more public light on because it goes to the secretary. We have to respond, and there's a process. And
all right, I think I get it. You're offering to those that are taking a rather strong position on this point that there is this other mechanism for them to use. Okay.
And
my point is
a strong position, but a position beyond the remit of this group.
And my point as the chair is I'm really seriously questioning our ability from the rules of procedure to force that kind of action on staff, whereas staff is saying then also there is this other mechanism that goes to the secretary.
Can I suggest something?
Yeah, please.
I think it's quite reasonable for us to say, listen, we think that in your statement of interest, you need to list any relationship you may have with any contractor. We don't have to say that there's a list. Then it becomes Christina's move within the council to sort of say, interesting proposal, but I don't see how I can do this unless they give me a list.
And then it
becomes a council issue. It's not really an us issue. I think it's quite reasonable for us to say, any relationship you may have to a contractor, you need to list it. And, to say to Christina, listen, your company, the same statement Ron's making about ICANN should be able to tell who their contractors are, in the same way, Christina's company should be able to tell who her company has contracts with. And so it's quite reasonable for us to say, listen, we understood, Christina, your comment. We agree that it is a reasonable request for, council or others to make that such a list be posted by ICANN. However, we also believe that by the same logic by which we can expect it from ICANN, you should be able to get it from your company. You should be able to send, So I think it's fine for us to say a person has a personal obligation to list any of their relationships. Now, if council believes that to do that more information is needed, that's good. But I think it's quite reasonable for us to say just you have a personal obligation.
I support what Avi just said, and I have to apologize because I'm the one that threw the wrench into this works, but I have to get off this call. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much for carrying that forward however the team feels it's appropriate, and I will look forward to seeing what our next call is.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you. Bye.
Hey, thanks, Ron.
Bye.
All right, Avery and Wolf, if you don't mind, we pretty much have Ron. That was nice of Ron to share that. So I think we can continue. Do you guys mind?
No, I suppose not.
All right, so Avery, if I'm understanding you correctly, you're basically suggesting a complete wipeout of this edit that sits now at number 4, right?
Yeah. I'm basically suggesting that we go back to you as a participant have a responsibility to answer about any relationships with any, and that we respond in the responses to Christina in the, the thing we build up that responds to questions, saying, we understand your point about needing a list, and we think that's a reasonable request for council to make. We also believe that it should be possible for you to ask your company accounting or contracts administrator, a question as to whom they have contracts with. And because I say the logic that Ron applied to ICANN applies to Christina's company just as easily.
Ray, can I make this is Julie. Can I make a quick comment on that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In a discussion that Liz and I had with Christina, it was interesting that she noted that her company keeps a very detailed database, one that she has to search frequently. I'm not going to speak for her. I certainly can't. But it would seem to me that, if a company does have a database, and legal firms, I think, very well do because they must, then they have a mechanism for doing this. I mean, her point was that, well, she didn't know,
the sort of exhaustive, when the question was directed as far as what ICANN entities, you know, do you have relationships with, then she would be looking outside of her company's database, you know, to try to determine all of those entities. It would probably be simpler for a company to look within itself at its own mechanisms for tracking these types of entities.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, we can go back and forth on that one. This is really about providing a statement of interest document that allows relevant parties to self-identify an interest. Everybody must complete the form. That is the procedural must of this. From there, it is then up to the individual to identify. And we're not policing these forms that, to my knowledge, whether they're accurate or full disclosures. I think we're just trying to find a way to have an enforcement mechanism in this that is not possible.
Well, I think we have the common, we have the same enforcement mechanism on this we have on any SOI, DOI. The community's collective knowledge.
Right.
If I care, I read the SOIs, and I know there are people that do. I tend not to. I know that there are people that read the SOIs, and if you see something, you raise a flag.
Right.
I've had the flag raised on me.
Right.
So, you know, and that's why I've become so incredibly particularistic about mine, because I did have the flag raised on me once.
Right. So if we are in agreement with what you just said, then we can rephrase the question, or if you will, in a way that isn't about placing an administrative onerous mechanism upon staff, unless staff says, yeah, we can do that, but they didn't. So I have to communicate. I think staff kind of complicated our situation here by in their edits offering some lists, right? Because then it becomes, okay, you offer these lists, but what about all this? Why highest paid and not lowest paid? You know, and I think it's complicated our discussion, I have to be honest with you. Avery, I think, is on the right track here in terms of this is about providing the opportunity for the individual to identify, not about providing lists. Okay. So I don't have the language, though. I don't have it to say here's what it should be.
What was it before we started making all these?
Okay,
changes?
Good. I was looking at that. So they changed. It originally said, please identify any ownerships, investment interests, or compensation arrangements by answering the following three questions. That got changed. That sort of heading got changed to, please identify the types of work performed at number one above. And number one above is, please identify your current employers and positions. All right. So anyway, I don't think we need to change that. But then going into the substance, it used to say, do you have any ownership or investment interest, excluding ownership of a de minimis number of shares in a publicly traded company, in any entity with which ICANN has a transaction, contract, or other arrangement? And that's what sparked the, well, I don't know what all other arrangements ICANN may be having a transaction with unless ICANN publishes it. So it was really simply about trying to polish that a little better to be the spirit of what it was about, which is if you happen to know that you do, then just state what it is rather than turning this into a policing function.
So I would go back to that statement.
I would agree. Do you have that statement in front of you, Aubrey and Wolf?
No.
Okay, all right, so let's try. So do you have any ownership or investment interest? I might change that to declare any ownership or investment interest, excluding ownership of a de minimis number of shares in a publicly traded company, period. No.
We need a little bit more
information on what
its ownership in. I mean, yeah.
Yeah,
that ownership of the credit union down the road, but
yeah, it has something to do with the reason we brought ICANN into it is because this pertains to ICANN. So
right.
We said in any
the SOIs you'll get from me if you leave it open ended like that.
Yeah,
I love to fill out forms to the absurdum.
I don't have the answer. We've got a lot of pause going on.
How about something simple?
I'm trying.
Okay, I have a suggestion on trying. I'm sure it's too
good.
Simple and illiterate.
Good.
Please list any financial relationship you may have with any company that does business with, or is contracted with ICANN, or contracted.
Doesn't it beg the same question, though? How do I know unless I know
that's
all the business?
That's your problem. I mean, that's
yeah, that's the way it should be. Yeah,
that's
the burden,
your
right.
Problem.
Right.
Right. And we can add a second, you know, any financial relationship beyond the minimum stock ownership. And I'll send this out so please list any financial relationship. Fell on first try. That's a relationship beyond de minimis stock ownership you may have with any company that does business with, or is contracted to ICANN. And then basically our response is, if you want to volunteer to do stuff, you know, you should figure this out. And as I said, it's quite reasonable, and this we should put in our response to whoever it is that made the initial comment or question, that, you know, this is information that you should be able to obtain if, you know, you believe that ICANN should be polishing a list of these things, either to help for this, or to help, you know, or just as a general, you know, disclosure information, you know, take it further. But for us, as they're saying, it's just reasonable to ask somebody to know that. Just like I always figure it's reasonable for people to know what their offset is from UTC. Yeah, it might be a little complicated to keep track of, but it's your life, you should know it.
Well, I do agree with you, Avery. It's better to go back to the way it was before and try and massage it a little bit rather than go down the path of ICANN is able to apply some lists but not all lists. So I'm in favor of that. Wolf, how do you feel?
In favor of to the original.
In favor to the original approach?
I would be, you know, I could live with that, but for me, it sounds a little bit, we try to cover all potential situations, a potential contacting, potential, let me say, relationship, and so in some words, this is not possible. So. For me, I could live with both. Either this way, the original one, or what you say, it's okay to me. It sounds okay to me. Yeah.
Okay. All right,
and
so
I sent those words, whether we want to use them or not, I sent them.
Okay, great. Let's try to.
And then people could correct them. Oops, did I send them from the right address? I'm constantly sending things.
So, by the way, Ray, did we leave the list? Yeah, the question for the list of companies which the point is which Ron was raising. So, because I'm not in favor of that, really not.
I'm sorry. What were you not in favor of, Wolf?
Well, I'm not. I understood that we left this question regarding a list, a specific list of companies. I personally tried to understand how such a list could help me, as being a member of a working group, to understand the SOI or DOI of such a person or other members, you know, or other people attending meeting. In case we have such a list. So I cannot find any reason for that.
You cannot find any reason to have such a list?
Well, I'm interested, you know. I'm interested in any information, yeah? But
right.
With regards to that, to the question, how does it help me to understand an SOI or DOI?
So it had to do with our question. Our question was, you know, please list any party that has any kind of relationship whatsoever with ICANN. And then it became people going, well, I can't answer that question because I don't know what all parties ICANN might have an interest. So really it was a procedural thing. It was a procedure. I can't answer I can't answer the question, which is different than a substantive purpose, which is what you're driving at. It's like substantively, my involvement in a working group, how does it help me that ICANN has published this big list? That's your point. I think I understand the distinction.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got Aubrey's language. Please list any financial relationship beyond de minimis stock ownership you may have with any company that does business with or is contracted to ICANN. How about this? Please list any relationship beyond de minimis stock ownership you may have with any company that has a financial relationship or contract to ICANN. Slightly different. Let me try that. Please list any relationship beyond de minimis stock ownership you may have with any company that has a financial relationship or contract with ICANN.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm going to send that around. I just sent that.
And I've even written up, and I'll send in a second, a words that one could use in the comment response to the request. I was planning to write other stuff all afternoon, but I had the writing thing going.
Okay. So you're working on...
It's about the spend. This is a response. In other words, we're obligated to respond, and if we've basically taken that recommendation for a list off of the things that we're doing, then we owe the questioner an answer as to why. Right? Don't we?
The questioner...
In other words, in responding to comments, don't we owe the commenter a response as to the disposition of their comments. Not in this document, but aren't we producing? I don't know what we're doing. Maybe it's just me and
you mean the comment to us to have a list?
The comments are supposed to have answers, aren't they? Didn't we do that? Isn't somebody doing that?
Which comment?
Am I dreaming? Am I in the wrong group? I might be in the wrong group.
Yeah. I don't think we had a comment.
So we're
you
not
mean as far as the public comment forum? You mean that? We're,
yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't believe.
Are we responding to a comment here in this issue?
This is Julie. We're responding to an issue that Christina Rosette raised, but we haven't gone out to.
We haven't gone to comments yet, so I'm being.
I know, you're. What, at least one of your other groups is doing that now.
They're all doing that. Okay, never mind. Forget it. I'll send this anyhow because I wrote it. But
well, don't worry. This will go out for public comment. So
we will get that.
We'll
comment.
Get there. We'll need it.
Nothing like thinking ahead, Avery.
Thank you.
Okay, so I believe that is for number 4. What about, there are some other edits in here, like after number 2. There's 4.1 and 4.2. I think number 1 is about existing relationships, and number 2 is about ones that may be coming in the future. Are you aware that you have any ownership or investment interest or compensation arrangement with any entity or individual with which you know that ICANN is negotiating a transaction? All right, so that's like a future arrangement. Are you aware of a future arrangement that's in the works? Are you aware of an arrangement that's going to happen? So
why don't we just take the previous one to keep things nice and short,
yeah,
and add you may have or be negotiating.
Yeah, I would always go, my comment to number 2 originally before we got into all this was going to be ICANN is actively negotiating. I mean, let's just take the example of a new GTLD applicant. They've gone and filed, someone is involved with a new applicant, the application has been filed, ICANN has not made that public, right? Who the applicant is, because they're going to wait 30 days before they make that public, or whatever that is, that period of time. So, you know, what am I to do? Am I supposed to, disclose that before the ICANN has even published, you know, the list of applicants, for example? So I think we just say actively negotiating a transaction or contract. Because if I've just submitted an application as part of a new GTLD applicant, ICANN isn't actively negotiating anything with me, right? I'm just one of many. Does that make sense? And I'm sorry if the example's not good. All right, so back to Aubrey's point. Okay, collapse these things.
So, Ray, if we collapse them, I mean, 4 had, 1, 2, and 3, and then I think there was a suggestion to delete 3. Essentially, we would have just 4, as I see it, which would be, please list any financial relationship and on de minimis stock ownership you may have, or may be actively negotiating a transaction or a contract with any company that has a financial relationship or contract with ICANN.
Yes, that's kind of where I was heading. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
So we're collapsing 1 and 2 together.
Make it simpler, honey.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. Wolf, you okay with that?
Yeah, okay.
All right, so that takes care, I think, of 1 and 2. I don't see any changes that we asked or were looking at for 5 and 6, except for it looks like we've got a comment that has popped into us for number 3, which is, do you receive any tangible or intangible benefit from participation in ICANN GNSO? Hey, by the way, you know what? I'm going to put on the record here. I can see why this was not adopted. I mean, good work, I think, by either the OSC or whatever, to say, you know what, this needs some more work. I can see, really can see why. All right, so do you receive any tangible or intangible benefit from participation in ICANN GNSO policy development processes and outcomes? All right, we've got a comment here that says, we recommend removing this requirement as it's not easily definable and can call for any number of disclosures. I can't disagree. Do you guys have number three in front of you here? I don't disagree that this should just be wiped out. I mean, think about it. Do you receive any tangible or intangible benefit?
Oh, that's the favorite one. That's the one that gets me to write all kinds of absurd stuff.
Yeah.
That's my favorite. That's my favorite absurdum. I love that one. That's the one that everybody gets mad at me when I write long treatises.
I can imagine. I can imagine. I can imagine.
I treat the rules to their full extent.
That's right, to the T. That's why these rules are really very important. You want to go, again, I hate to use the example, and I know we're being recorded, but how many of us played Monopoly, right? And we all, you know, we make up our own rules, and you go back and you want to pull out the rule book. Well, that's exactly it. So we want to be crisp here as best we can, and you know, in my view, I'm kind of agreeing with whoever is providing us this comment to this document that is saying, just, I think you need to get rid of this one. But I'm looking to you to...
And Ray, this is Julie. I should note that comment came from Samantha Eisner in legal.
Okay, right. So I'm looking to Aubrey and Wolf.
Oh, yeah. The NCSG, more than just me, the NCSG is into seeing that one done away with.
Okay. Wolf, do you have any position the other way?
No. Nope.
All right. So I'm going to ask Julie to edit this section by deleting that.
Now gone.
Okay, great. All right. So are we there? Are we there? We've just gone through. Oh, wait a minute. No, we're not. And I'm going to ask you guys to hang on a little bit longer here, because we've got section 5.3.2, although we did discuss that, didn't we? So
yeah, awaiting the disposition of 5.3.3 because the online forms can't be created and implemented until we know what questions we're asking people.
All right, yeah, we talked about that a little while ago. Okay, so with that said, I believe we have now come to a relative consensus view on the proposed recommendations to the OSC. Right?
Yeah, we probably want to read through it before, but yeah.
Yes. So yeah, what is our deadline? What is our deadline?
I've captured these, and I can put them all into one redline document and send them around quite
yes.
This call.
Yes, what's our deadline to get the recommendation in front of the OSC in time for the October 28th council meeting?
Well, it's pretty tight. I mean, I think you'd want to get it by Monday because Wednesday is the deadline for resolutions to go to be submitted to the council. And so if the OSC says, yeah, these are great, so we want to, you know, send it up to the council, and then councilors would have to very quickly do, you know, suggest a resolution that would say that these are approved. So we're pretty tight.
All right, but still time.
Right, and even so, I mean, I think the point was to be able to show that there was progress on these issues, you know, to be able to report on them. Of course, we'd like them to all be taken care of, and maybe that will happen quickly. But if you got it to the OSC on Monday, you know, and give today or part of Monday to look at it, I'm sure that would be fine.
So, Julia, your schedule, you think you're able to get, an edited version, a redline version out? Before
the
day today?
Yeah, because I've been using a document and editing. I've been editing a document live as we've been going. So we're
in last call here. Please put that in when you send around the document. Please state that these are the edits as they sit today. This is last call prior to the chair sending it on to the chair of the OSC. End of business day Monday.
I will do that, and I'll indicate that in the message.
Yeah. So is everybody good with that?
Yeah.
Okay. Any other business?
And then do you want to wait and see what happens, or, you know, and not schedule a call for next Wednesday? Because I don't know that there'd be anything to discuss, but there might be some, you know, traffic online.
There's no call for this work team next Wednesday.
There isn't scheduled as of now.
And it's not possible because people are unable to.
Traveling. That's right. That's why we're having it today. Thank you for reminding me that.
That's okay. So,
all right.
So this is it. So I think that's where we are. Unless something arises, we should be all anticipating that the redline version. So please send me a redline version and, of course, a complete version, Julie.
All right. I'll do redline and clean.
And then if I don't hear anything by end of day Monday, you know, figure, you know, late Monday, this is going over to Philip at the OSC with our recommendation from the work team for the OSC to approve.
He's going to have a full plate because we're following the exact same procedure for the constituency and stakeholder group operations team on their outreach recommendations. So he'll have two things in front of him on Monday.
Good. Really want to keep Phil busy. Right? And so part of this is me just talking out loud to make sure I've got the next steps down correctly. So if I've said anything from the work team that they're not sure about or agreement with, speak up. But I don't hear anything, so I think we're okay. All right, so if no other business, why don't we end the recording and adjourn the meeting?
Great.
Okay.
Everyone, this meeting is adjourned, and operator, please end the recording.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Nice job, everybody. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.